Good morning, everyone. It's 9 o'clock on February 17th, and I'm Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo, and with that, I will call this special meeting to order. If everyone would, let's do call, roll call first. Carrie, please, would you take the roll call?
Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Arascada.
Here.
Regent Boylan.
I saw him.
Regent Boylan, you're on mute. Thank you. We see you, Regent Boylan. Regent Brooks?
Here.
Regent Carter?
Present.
Regent Dubrava?
Here.
Regent Geddes?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent McMichael? Regent McMichael? I can't hear you. Regent Moran? Regent Moran. Regent Moran. Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Tarkanian.
Present.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
Thank you so much, Carrie. And if everyone would please stand, and Regent Byron Brooks will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please join me in reciting the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, and please be seated. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washoe, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Let's see. And with that, we will go to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko at this time.
Thank you very much. Is there public comment in Reno?
Yes, Chair Pro Tem. We have a couple.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Emily Bird. That's E-M-I-L-Y-B-I-R-D. And I am here today as a representative for the Nevada Graduate Student Workers and for the over 2,100 and climbing signees of our petition to reinstate the mask mandate at all NC institutions. Currently in Washoe County, the transmission rate of COVID-19 is classified as high. Yes, we are on a downturn from the Omicron surge, but removing the mask mandate this early violates CDC guidelines for institutions of higher education. Not to mention there is no longer any vaccination mandate, even after we were promised this for spring semester. We are all losing confidence that COVID-19 precautions on our campuses will be guided by science. The science is there and has been proven time and time again, vaccinations work, yet the vaccination mandate was dropped. Masks work, yet the mask mandate was dropped. Universities and states that do not have a mask mandate, such as Ohio and Arizona, are still requiring masks on their campuses. As a result, the infection and transmission rates at these universities are notably lower than the rates in their surrounding counties. Removing the mask mandate is actively putting our immunocompromised PAC members at risk. It's putting our PAC member to live at home with elderly relatives at risk, or young children who cannot yet get vaccinated at risk. It is putting our PAC members who have loved ones with serious illnesses at risk. It is showing us that NC doesn't value all members of our PAC equally. It is showing us that NC is willing to put our health, our safety, our well-being, our community at risk. We deserve to go to school in safety. NC employees deserve to teach and learn without fearing for our lives or the lives of our loved ones. reinstate the mask mandate at all entry institutions until the county measures are in the low or moderate range. Don't make us get sick or risk dying for our jobs, for our degrees, for our chances at a better future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Todd Rucker, T-O-D-D-R-U-E-C-K-E-R. And I'm here today to read a statement on behalf of the Nevada Faculty Alliance, UNR Chapter Board. The University of Nevada, Reno Chapter of the Nevada Faculty Alliance strongly condemns all forms of harassment, bias, and intimidation towards members of our community who continue to wear masks and or who call for the reinstatement of the mask mandate on our campus. Much of the harassment, bias, and intimidation that has occurred has especially targeted faculty, students, and staff who are women, people of color, LGBTQ plus people, people with disabilities, and our chronic health conditions, and our others from minoritized communities. These patterns of conduct are deeply disturbing and antithetical to the values of an institution of higher education. We affirm the right of all members of our campus community to wear masks without fear of harassment, bias, or intimidation. We join others in calling for a reinstatement of the mask mandate in order to protect those most vulnerable during periods of high community transmission. In the absence of a mask mandate, we affirm the right of faculty, students, and staff to request masks in their classrooms and our offices based on individual circumstances and evaluation of risk. Until or unless a mandate is reinstated, faculty, students, and staff must possess the right to conduct work and learning remotely, including by holding and or attending classes synchronously on Zoom. The Centers for Disease Control guidance has not changed, and community transmission rates remain high. Following scientific guidelines and advocating for workplace and classroom safety should not be targeted as improper anywhere on our classroom, on our campus, or in our classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Natasha Boers, N-A-T-A-S-C-H-A-B-O-E-R-S, and I'm representing myself as a student. Please, right now is the time to do your jobs. Right now is the time for you to protect those of us who are made more vulnerable to COVID, like me. I recently had surgery to remove a tumor that affected my ability to speak and breathe, and I get tests monthly to ensure that I don't slip into organ failure. Tests that come at high price to my time, and also I just don't have the money. I don't have the money to be sick now to get COVID. I don't have the time either. I'm at high risk for severe infection, even with my vaccine and booster. The chances that I'll develop a critical case are high. Consider my student also, who shared with me their experience of attending a different class in a lecture hall that was poorly ventilated and packed with nearly 100 people, many of whom were maskless, including a professor. My student is immunocompromised, and catching COVID despite the vaccine and booster shot nearly landed this student in the hospital. This isn't to say that the vaccine didn't do its job. It likely saved the student from a much more serious case of COVID, perhaps a case that could have been fatal. But the student didn't have the choice to enter into a safe learning environment when they attended class on a campus that no longer required masks. The vaccine mandate dropped, though before, and she promised it was one of our best weapons against the fight. Somehow you could rationalize that you were still working to protect us despite allowing more leeway for the transmission of the virus. Next, the moment Governor Sisolak dropped the mask mandate, you all dropped it as well. Somehow you still argue you're protecting us. And the language you use is exquisite in its legal design, keeping your hands clean to avoid making actual decisions that would help people like me in this fight against the virus. It feels like you've given up. Like you're choosing an easier path, allowing passive forms of violence against the vulnerable from those who hide behind slogans of freedom and choice. But we need collective action, collective empathy. Wearing a mask seems like a minor inconvenience when peers are dangerously vulnerable to COVID. COVID isn't over. Please do your jobs. Protect your people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Payson, chair of the Faculty Senate at UNR, but speaking on behalf of the Council of Senate Chairs today, AMYPASON. The Council of Senate Chairs was contemplating what we would do, what position we would take if transmission rates were low enough, below the 8% positivity rates that the previous state mandate dictated would be the factor of removing the mask mandate. The sense of the Council of Senate Chairs was that we should remain firm in ensuring that masks continued on our campus until transmission rates were low. This is a position that would protect the vulnerable in our communities, in our classrooms. In dropping the mask mandate while transmission rates were high, we are definitely concerned about the well-being of our staff, our faculty, and especially our students in our classroom. We went from a position of which we were trying to prevent disease, protect the vulnerable by wearing masks, to now prioritizing individual rights. I've heard stories on our campus where students who might be recovering from cancer, going through chemo treatments, or some of these other medical situations that you just heard from the student, now have to think about taking classes via Zoom or getting some other accommodations because being in a room with maskless folks is no longer safe for them to attend class. So if we want to prioritize access and inclusion of our communities, we must ensure that we follow CDC guidelines and ensure that we continue to wear masks until low transmission rates are on our campus. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there more public comment in Reno?
Hello, good morning. My name is Kent Ervin, K-E-N-T-E-R-V-I-N. Since the beginning of the pandemic, ENCHI promised to follow the public health experts to keep students and instructors safe while maintaining our educational mission. In May 2021, we were promised that vaccinations could be required for the fall semester, but that did not happen. In August, we were promised that the student vaccinations would be required for spring. We all prepared to go back to full in-person instruction with that assurance, but it did not happen. Now the facial coverings policy, as recommended by the Centers for Disease Control, has suddenly been rescinded in the middle of the semester, despite community and campus case levels over three times the CDC threshold for high transmission. This has been a colossal failure of leadership at all levels, resulting in a series of bait and switches and promises broken. No wonder faculty and many students are demoralized and angry. Today, you could have taken action on campus safety after the governor passed responsibility back to ENCHI. Instead, you're just talking about leadership. Therefore, in new business, I'm asking at least three regents to request an agenda item for action at the earliest opportunity. One, to state that as ENCHI policies to follow the recommendations of the CDC for institutions of higher education regarding non-pharmaceutical interventions against COVID. Two, to require each institution to implement the CDC recommendations as minimum requirements. And three, to recognize the authority for departments and instructors to go beyond the minimum requirements based on the circumstances in their own courses, which are different for lectures versus labs versus discussions, or as accommodations for persons in vulnerable groups. Please show leadership and get this done. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment in Reno? Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Wait, one more, sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Hello. My name is Jace McNaught, J-A-C-E-M-C-N-A-U-G-H-T. I'm a ASUN senator for the College of Business, and I'm speaking on behalf of my constituents. Good morning. I'm coming here to say that many students greatly oppose bringing back this mask mandate. A lot of students oppose the mask mandate in the first place, just seeing it as being an intrusion of our right to choose. There's nothing stopping people from still wearing masks, and when you're looking at this petition right now, it has only over 2,000 signatures, including graduate students, staff, and alumni, for ENCHI, which has a student body population of over 100,000 students. When you look at that statistically, the numbers just don't really add up. There's way more people who are completely fine with not having this mask mandate. Being an at-risk and vulnerable person myself, I have no problem with the mask mandate being lifted, and I completely take that weight and bear that responsibility upon myself. I'm fully vaccinated, and I have my booster shot, and I wear my mask when I deem fit, see it deemed fit in an environment where I do not feel safe. But outside of that, in situations like the gym, at football games, at basketball games, I don't feel like masks should be mandated. You still have the right to choose and be able to wear a mask if you want to, but I think enforcing this on students when they do not wish to see it and they're happy to see it gone would be not representing my constituents well, and I think to bring back the mask mandate would just be ludicrous. So with that, that's my piece. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That looks like it. Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo.
Okay, thank you, Regent Geddes. With that, we'll go to Las Vegas. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? You can come up to the podium.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Hostetler. Last name is H-O-S-T-E-T-L-E-R. I'm with the law firm of Lewis Rocha Rothgerber Christie. My firm is legal counsel to Chancellor Melody Rose with respect to her workplace complaint that she filed and is subject of the February 4th, 2022 investigation report. I've reviewed the investigation report and I am disappointed. I have conducted, supervised, and reviewed numerous investigations both as an employment attorney in the private sector and as a chief deputy attorney general in the Nevada Office of the Attorney General over the last 12 years. Employee complaints should be thoroughly vetted by the investigator with each material allegation investigated and addressed. However, the investigation here primarily focused on gender discrimination and determining whether gender discrimination occurred. It did not fully vet the chancellor's other claims, including those related to violations of the Board of Regents bylaws and handbook and the chancellor's contract. Importantly, while the investigation revealed potential ethics violations by certain board members, those violations have not been thoroughly investigated and driven to a conclusion. Instead, they remain unresolved. It should be noted that the chancellor filed her complaint under NRS Chapter 281, Nevada's whistleblower protection statutes. Should Chancellor Rose be retaliated against in any manner for filing the complaint and bringing forward her concerns and potential violations by board members, I anticipate there will be significant legal consequences. I end by stating that Chancellor Rose simply wants to be able to do her job. She remains committed to focusing on Nevada students and taking steps to improving transparency, accountability, and student outcomes in the Nevada system of higher education. And I hope she'll be given the opportunity to fairly do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Amy Ayoub, A-M-Y-A-Y-O-U-B, lifelong Las Vegan and 2016 recipient of your Distinguished Nevadan Award. Over my many years, I've seen positive and negative issues obviously come out of the higher education system. I couldn't remain silent on this issue because as a survivor of human trafficking who was afraid to speak up for almost 40 years, afraid of being judged, afraid of not being believed, it bothered me, it disappointed me, it shocked me really that somebody of Chancellor Rose's stature was being judged for speaking out and was not being believed. It also bothered me that the very board that hired her is not supporting her 100%. I encourage you to examine how you're interacting with Chancellor Rose because the community is watching, especially the community of students. At least at UNLV, that's over 55% female. We're watching. Actions speak louder than words. So what are your actions? What message are your actions sending? The message should be strong and clear that students should be able to expect to move into positions of power and influence in politics, business, and yes, in education, anywhere really. And not only should they expect to hold those positions, they should expect to be respected and supported when they hold those positions. Previously, for about two decades, I consulted with nonprofits, and I often advised that if the time came the board members were there, that their individual purpose for being on the board was in conflict with the mission of the board, it would be time for them to maybe choose to move somewhere where they're more in alignment. And I leave you with that suggestion today. I would like you to imagine the positive outcomes that could be possible if we surrounded Chancellor Rose with support and respect. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Chris Engelstad, Engelstad Foundation. I've watched a history of us not treating people very well. We have a history of vetting, finding talent, and then for whatever reason, we tear them down and treat them poorly. This is just the latest example with Chancellor Rose. I was struck by the outside firm that was hired to do their independent research and give an opinion. This is the same independent firm that rendered an opinion on if I was in collusion with Len Jessup over donor funds. And in their investigation, they never had a conversation, they never picked up the phone. They had a narrative, and they stuck with the narrative, and they rendered an opinion. Yet, even this group that is highly suspect found that in the behavior of McAdoo and Carter, that they showed poor judgment, that their belief that the chancellor's office needs to be reined in is not helpful. The idea that they want to keep information away from the chancellor is not helpful. Anytime you become bigger than the mission, and the mission is this school, the mission are these students, anytime an ego is so involved that it gets in the way, which was what I observed with Regents McAdoo and Carter, I can't imagine why they'd put themselves first in front of the students.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Beverly Rogers, Beverly Rogers. I am committed to the Nevada system of higher education in so many ways and have been for a very long time. I'm committed because this is the road that lifts our youth. This is the road that takes us into a healthy future. This is the road toward a diversified workplace, just for starters. All of that and all that's happened here with the investigation over Chancellor Rose confuses me. I have questions. I don't understand and want to ask you what kinds of ethics violations you might be committing today by putting the two individuals back in charge who committed ethics violations. Even though they weren't called gender bias, they were definitely ethics violations, and they were called that in the report. And the other thing I want to ask is, should donors and people who support Chancellor Rose consider this a slap in our face? It's just appalling to me. We finally have a chancellor who has vision, who has leadership skills, who has the experience to take Nevada somewhere it's never been. And the very least she deserves is a strong backing from her board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Cassie Charles, that's C-H-A-R-L-E-S. I'm here on behalf of the Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada. Our university regent system is broken and is not serving our students or our community. Several regents have blatant disregard for the safety of our campuses and have created hostile environments. Recent examples have come to light to include clear violations in representing the constituents they serve, Regents Boylan and Regents Brooks. These two regents have created more than distractions. They have demonstrated they are not fit to serve the students and faculty that are a part of NC. Since February 3rd, we have mobilized 247 people to sign our petition calling for their resignation. You're aware of this because all of these petitions have been directly sent to all of your NC official emails, and we are here today reaffirming our call for your resignation. Since 1994, PLAN has been advocating for a fair and just Nevada that allows Nevadans of all backgrounds, regardless of race, class, immigration status, to thrive. We believe it is past time for someone to stand up for those communities who have had institutional barriers to higher education. Whether it be racist comments, creating an unsafe environment, or belonging to a group of far-right extremists, it is clear that Regent Boylan and Regent Brooks must resign for the best interests of students and faculty. If you need a resignation letter, please let us know. You are more than welcome to reach out to us at Plan Nevada. We are happy to provide a template. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Lindy Schumacher, S-C-H-U-M-A-C-H-E-R.
It's been a while since I've been here, COVID or no COVID. You are a constant reminder why we left the university, why we no longer fund the universities of Southern Nevada. And your actions currently, and I'm sure in the near future, are going to just push us away even further. You hire talented people, and you make it impossible for them to run their university. This brilliant man could pick up the phone, and the answer is going to be no. Not because he's not doing well, because you're not. It's an embarrassment, it's an impossibility, and a reminder every single day why we walked away from UNLV, and we're not coming back.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Del Carlo, members of the Board of Regents, Chancellor Rose. For the record, Paul Muratkin, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the Vegas Chamber. The Vegas Chamber is urging the Regents not to change a board leadership at this time. Earlier this week, the Vegas Chamber, along with several business and labor organizations, issued a letter calling for the Nevada Commission on Ethics to pursue an investigation regarding several members of the Nevada Board of Regents. We believe the Ethics Commission should investigate the allegations that were referred to in the independent report that was commissioned by this body. That work should be completed before any additional changes occur to board leadership. To move forward today with the posted agenda in its entirety would be negligent in the chamber's opinion and do a disservice to our community and to the system. We ask this board to do the right thing and to recognize the growing concerns within our community about the effectiveness of this board and system. The integrity of this board, along with the trust that the public puts in higher education system, is at stake. We urge the board to abandon its vote today. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Lisa Levine, I know firsthand how political and petty the relationships in this building can be. Lots happened over the last few months, and tensions are high. I get that. But remember that the time and taxpayer dollars that you're wasting today on these popularity contests could have been invested in improving Nevada's education system. Instead, your own investigative report found that the ethical code of conduct for regents in the handbook was violated in several instances and goes on to identify 4 ethics issues by Carter and 5 by former Chair McAdoo. You want to reinstate them as your leaders? We've been through 2 years of a pandemic. We've had enough chaos and instability, and community needs leadership, consistent, steady leadership, now more than ever. Enough with the personal politics. Nevada needs you to get to work. Your constituents are watching, as today shows, very much so, and I strongly recommend that you do not support this agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Maureen Schaefer, Executive Director, Council for Better Nevada. We are one of many community organization signers of a letter received by Nevada Ethics Commission Chair Kim Wallen and Executive Director Ross Armstrong, citing a recently released report investigating serious allegations by Chancellor Melody Rose that raised concerns about inappropriate actions by Regent Patrick Carter and Regent Kathy McAdoo. The report prepared by outside counsel hired by the Board of Regents of the University of Nevada remains inconclusive, raising serious questions about public integrity and multiple unanswered possible ethics violations by members of the Board of Regents. In particular, allegations of 2 members of the Board of Regents should be reviewed by the Ethics Commission to conclude whether ethical standards for public officials have been violated. Should this board not retain this chancellor due to this ongoing conflict, let's understand the circumstances we all find ourselves in again. The current chancellor would be the 6th person to serve in this role in the last 6 years. Are we really shocked at the accusations set forth in the complaint? What may be the most shocking revelation is that we now have a current chancellor who is willing to publicly reveal personal experiences that many know to be commonplace behavior others have witnessed, experienced, or heard about for many years at the Board of Regent level and within the Nevada system of higher education. What also isn't shocking but continually disappointing is that a previous decision was made in this past November's Regent Board meeting where the board proactively voted to reinstall Regent Carter and McAdoo pending the outcome of the investigation. This now inconclusive investigation and today's meeting is solely for that action. Before any action to change board leadership takes place, the allegations against Regent Carter and McAdoo should be examined by the Ethics Commission. At the very least, should this board feel compelled to vote to accept an inconclusive report, Regent Carter and McAdoo should recuse themselves from voting on a report that has not exonerated them from their behavior and conduct as regents. Repeatedly revisiting incidents like this within the Nevada system of higher education further reinforces the sentiment that the ENSHE system of governance is outdated, antiquated, and broken when we read chancellor complaints and inconclusive reports and board agendas for meetings like today. Where is the focus on students? The people may change, but the behavior continues. The most stable governance action you can pursue today is no action. Make no changes. In the last two decades, our seven campus institutions have retained nearly 40 presidents, six chancellors, and 40 presidents. We must govern better if our higher education system will ever perform better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Shannon Sumter, Chair of the UNLV Faculty Senate. I came over today to hear how you resolve the latest embarrassment to yourselves. But I also came to tell you that you face an even bigger embarrassment, the fact that you will not support the institutions and protect the people you are responsible for. Despite the autonomy that ENSHE possesses that enabled you to pass an employee vaccination mandate for which the vast majority of us are grateful, I am told there is not the appetite amongst you to mandate masks on campus, at least till the end of this semester, or the appetite to give autonomy to the ENSHE institutions to decide what is appropriate for them. No appetite to listen to the science. No appetite to rise above politics and use the power you hold responsibly instead of in the petty, unethical ways that today's report highlights. And who wears hats or guns in a formal meeting? At 70, I don't have the appetite to work in an environment where repeatedly you demonstrate you are uncomfortable endangering me. I don't have the appetite to teach 18 unmasked students in a tiny classroom with a maximum capacity of 18, no windows, and a closed door. And regrettably, I don't have the appetite to respect who you are and what you do anymore. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Yap, C-A-R-E-N-Y-A-P, and I serve as the current student body president for CSUN, UNLV's undergraduate student government. I have never been more disheartened by this body, and truly, I believe that says it all. Workplace harassment, discrimination, alleged misuse of firearm possession, the removal of the mask mandate. I'm sure criticism to this body is nothing new, and it's difficult to come up here and express my sentiments, knowing how far change is, and frankly, not guaranteed. Including the fact that when I speak, I feel as though only a quarter of the body is truly listening. Instead, I'll use this time to applaud a member of ENSHE who continues to fight the good fight and may not always hear a thank you. Chancellor Rose, thank you for what you do for the state of Nevada. Thank you for attending all student events when possible, and thank you for truly listening, and thank you for doing what you can to hold this body accountable. I encourage your colleagues to follow your lead. Hold yourself accountable, and per the internal legal memo, I'm asking all seven regents mentioned to do your due diligence and abstain from today's vote. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any more public comment in Las Vegas. Anybody? Okay, thank you. And I do want to say that we have received written public comment, and all of those comments are on our ENSHE website. And all of the written public comments are also forwarded to all 13 regents for us to read. So be assured that we are seeing those. And with that, let's see. All right, we're going to go to agenda item 2. Before we get started on that, I just want to make a few remarks about the purpose of this special meeting. Under the Board of Regents handbook, the chair of the board is required to call a special meeting of the board upon the written request of at least five regents. The board's interim chief of staff received requests for this special meeting from Regents Arascata, Boylan, Brooks, Carter, McAdoo, and Perkins. as set forth in this meeting agenda, as it relates to a confidential personnel investigation, we will not be discussing the character or competence of any regent or the chancellor at this meeting. And we have legal representation from the Attorney General's office to advise us on open meeting law requirements. This agenda item requests the board's consideration regarding whether it will acknowledge the conclusion of the investigation for the purpose of effectuating the action taken by the board in November to elect temporary officers to serve through the duration of the internal personnel investigation. The board's determination to conclude the investigation will return Regents McAdoo and Carter to their respective positions as chair and vice chair. Before I accept any motion or discussion of this item, I would like to ask whether we have any regent disclosures or abstentions, and then I would like to turn to Chief Deputy Attorney General Rosalie Bordelove to provide us some advice and limitations on our action or discussion under the open meeting law requirements. So, do I have any regents with any disclosure or abstentions?
Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo?
Yes, Regent Geddes.
I would like to announce that I was named in one of the addendums that we didn't see until January regarding the November 12th meeting. But I do not think there is any reason for me to abstain today, and I will elaborate on that later.
Okay, so thank you.
I'm disclosing, but I'm not abstaining.
Okay, thank you, Regent Geddes. Anyone else? Okay. Now I'd like to turn this to Chief Deputy Attorney General Bordelove for an overview of the open meeting law issues, including whether we have an appropriate quorum and the number of votes necessary to take action on this matter.
Good morning, Chief Deputy Attorney General Rosalie Bordelove with For the Record. Nevada's open meeting law requires agendas to include a clear and complete statement of the topics scheduled to be considered at the meeting. In addition, the law requires written notice to be served on a person whose character, alleged misconduct, professional competence, or physical or mental health may be discussed at a public meeting. Because of these requirements, I'm advising the board today to refrain from discussing the details of the report issued by Fenimore Craig and to refrain from considering the character of the chancellor, the individual regents, or any other individuals involved in the investigation, as they have not been noticed for this meeting today. My advice is also to keep today's agenda item to a determination whether to consider the internal complaint investigation concluded for the sole purpose of returning the chair and vice chair to their respective leadership positions. Any further action regarding the investigation and report should be saved for a future meeting. And on the quorum issue, NRS 241.0355 requires that as an elected body, a majority of all members of the body vote in favor of an action for of a motion for it to pass. Where there are abstentions upon that are upon advice of counsel under the ethics law, those individuals may be removed from the quorum requirement and the requirement for votes in favor. It sounds like at this time, though, we don't have any abstentions, so an affirmative vote of 7 would be required for action.
Thank you. And item number 2 is a possible action item, and the board will consider acknowledging the conclusion of the internal complaint investigation for the purpose of effectuating the action taken by the board at its November 12, 2021 meeting to elect pro tempore officers to serve through the duration of the internal complaint investigation. The conclusion of the investigation will return Regent Kathy McAdoo and Regent Patrick R. Carter to their respective position as chair and vice chair of the board. And at this point, I will now open the floor to discussion, or we'll entertain a motion and the second so we can have discussion on the motion. Regent Carballo?
Thank you, Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo. This agenda item is fraught with issues that I cannot support. This motion asks for the acknowledgement of the conclusion of this investigation, which is factual and has occurred, but also explicitly ties the return of previous leadership to that conclusion, with no other discussion, remediation, or indication as to how the board moves forward. This implies that the board will simply return to the environment that initiated the original complaint. This is not the path forward for the board that I support. The Board of Regents has been the focus of a lot of scrutiny from many constituents just during the 3 years that I've been on the board. To most, these instances of bad behavior have been essentially swept under the rug. Issues have not been addressed or resolved in a transparent way. This does not foster a culture of continuous improvement. This motion appears to be the very same treatment. I can no longer stand by and allow this to occur. We cannot continue to ignore the voice of the public, including our philanthropic and business leaders here in Southern Nevada, who have asked for an external investigation into ethics violations by some regents, and Governor Sisolak, who has implored us to work collaboratively and collegially with Chancellor Rose, not the adversarial approach that many on the board have taken. Our students, employees, and constituents deserve better from the Board of Regents. I cannot give my blanket support for this motion, and I intend to not support it, as many within and outside our system have voiced. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Regent Getty's hand go up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Pro Tem. And I cannot disagree with Regent Carballo anymore, but I just want to state a few items, and I would move approval of item, agenda item number two. But I just want to say a few things. There is nothing in today's action says anything positive or negative about the chancellor. We got a complaint. We had an investigation. Per our policy, we hired an outside firm to perform the investigation, and that investigation from the outside firm is complete. There were issues, as many in public comments stated, about possible ethical violations, but there were no confirmed ethical violations. And those possible violations are referred to the Ethics Commission. And honestly, if every governing agency in the state of Nevada had to stop its business because of possible ethical violations that are reported to the State Ethics Commission, city governments, school districts, Board of Regents would shut down because they happen all the time. So there has been an issue, a complaint filed, and that complaint will be investigated by the Ethics Commission. And if they rule at that point in time, we take action, but we don't get paralyzed by complaints and allegations. And as I said, when the first complaint came out in October, and again, I mentioned earlier that I didn't know about the subsequent complaints until after we asked the attorney. But allegations are not fact. And if we go through the independent investigator's report regarding Title VII, there were no findings of fact that could be supported. So, I am here, and I've been here for many years now, and too many years that I will mention, but the reason I serve is to support the students, the staff, the faculty, and no action today in accepting this report impacts anybody other than we accept the report and we restore the leadership that we approved and voted on back in June. And again, I appreciate you and Regent Carballo stepping up and acting as pro tem and getting us through this period of time, but I think it's responsible for us to go back to the votes that we have taken. And if we need to make changes, we have votes coming up in June. And those changes will occur in June. So, I mean, when I look at the November 12th agenda, the Deputy Attorney General, Bordalove, and our Deputy General Counsel, Navarez Goodman, crafted the agenda item. And the way that agenda item was written was once the complaint was resolved, that Regents McAdoo and Carter would be reinstated to their positions, and then we would go forward. Since we got the complaint, we all received the complaint, and very unfortunately, with so many of our attorney-client documents that go out, they've been leaked to the press. So I'm not very happy with that all the way along, and I would hope that my colleagues and our staff would not release that information since it is attorney-client privilege. But it is out there, and it's in the public. And so everybody has seen it. And we saw that there was no actual violations per the independent third-party report where our staff recused themselves from anything. So there may be ethical issues that they'll have to look into, but those don't impact what we're doing today. And anything we do today, again, does not impact Chancellor Rose in any way other than accepting this report. And I mentioned allegations are not facts. And if you go through that report and you look at it, a lot of the allegations were not substantiated. And we can't consider those facts in which we have to take action on it. And the one thing I want to point out, and it's kind of a question, the advice we got yesterday from our deputy general counsel, that seven of us would have to abstain because we're named in a complaint, I just find incredible. I don't know if you could just name people in complaints and then they're no longer allowed to vote on issues without there being any fact or definition of what's going on there. And with that, I do want to ask a question of our deputy counsel, because she stated in that memo that did get leaked and shouldn't have gotten leaked, but it did, that the seven of us couldn't vote today. But when I go down to Nevada Revised Statutes 281A 420, discussion disclosure, the legislature and the law says that as publicly elected officials, we have to vote unless there is a firm conflict that keeps us from voting. And each one of us, the seven of us who were told that we had to abstain, I mean, I represent more than 230,000 citizens of Nevada. And if you tell seven of us we have to abstain, you're talking about 2.3 million citizens in Nevada that aren't represented in today's debate and discussion. And I just find that unsatisfactory to me that we would just exclude the representation from everybody based on that opinion. And the question for Deputy Counsel, and then I'll wrap up, Madam Chair, was when I go down to NRS 281A 420, again, it says we have to vote. And the only reason to abstain from voting is that A, the public officer acceptance of a gift or a loan, B, the public officer officer's significant pecuniary interest, or C, the public officer's commitments in a private capacity to the interests of another person. And nowhere in the complaint or in the opinion, and in my personal case, and I can't speak for the other six that were listed, there's nothing that I have done that violates any of those three provisions. And that's why I'm not abstaining and I'm going to vote. And with that, I would move approval of agenda item number two.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
Was that you, Regent Boylan, I heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second, and discussion on the motion, please. Regent Chair, Brooks. Sorry. Regent Brooks has his hand up here. I can see him. And let's just get a line of people. If Geddes will be after Brooks. Anybody else virtually? In the past, we've texted Carrie. Carrie, do you have anybody? Okay. So we'll go with Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair Pro Tem. I just wanted to echo a little bit of Regent Geddes' statement. Obviously, it's very public. I'm one of the seven. But for the reasons that Regent Geddes has already explained, I won't be abstaining today. I'm unaware of anything that needs to be added to the investigation concerning the complaint, nor am I unaware of any items in the complaint that haven't been addressed. Therefore, what I acknowledge is that the attorney, Scott Abbott, who is outside system counsel representation, that hired Fenmore Craig to investigate the claims, he was in communication with the board and let us know exactly what the Chair Pro Tem had stated at the beginning of the meeting, and that is that there was a recommendation from the Attorney General's office that an agenda item be framed as calling the board to action to declare the internal investigation concluded and to restore prior leadership pursuant to the vote taken at the November 12th special meeting. Additionally, Fenmore Craig uses the language concluded in the report several times on pages 23 and 24 of the 25-page report, and specifically on page 24 with a heading of section 4 on page 24 is titled conclusion. Unless someone has something to override this 120-day investigation report, then I don't see in good conscience how anyone can say or offer that it hasn't been concluded. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. And with that, we'll go to Regent Geddes, followed by Regent Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to request that all of my remarks are included verbatim into the minutes to fully disclose why I'm not abstaining today and my reasoning. So I would like that to be included there. But I just want to circle back because it was actually a question for Deputy Counsel was when I look at NRS 281A420, 3, A, B, and C, the three reasons we should abstain, I cannot find any of those three reasons in the complaint or why any of us would abstain. And I would just like Deputy Counsel Navarez Goodson to say on the record why, without any of those three conditions, why any of us should abstain, because I did email her yesterday and told her I was going to complain about this, but I see no reason for us to abstain. So I know she's had time to do more homework and kick me because I'm a chemist and not a lawyer, but I would just like her to address that issue before we get to a vote. Thank you.
And with that, I will call on our Deputy Chief Counsel, Navarez Goodson. I've got to remember which is this. And actually, Regent Perkins will be after Regent Geddes. I didn't realize she was in the queue. So I apologize, Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair Pro Tem, through you to Regent Geddes. As this board is aware, prior to my tenure here at NG, I was both the executive director and general counsel for the Nevada Commission on Ethics for more than 12 years. And the basis of my advice in this instance, and you're correct, that for purposes of disclosure and abstention, it does need to be tied to a conflict of interest, which the ethics law defines as, for purposes of disclosure and abstention, a pecuniary interest, a commitment in a private capacity to the interests of others, or the acceptance of a gift or a loan. As you will recall, it was my advice, based upon looking at these issues and the nature of this agenda item, that when a person is named in an investigation that is subsequently investigated, it does in fact affect their personal interests and their pecuniary interests. You do have a pecuniary interest in your capacity and your role as a regent. You also have a pecuniary interest in any potential liability that an investigation may cause to you. And on the basis of that advice, I recommended both disclosure and abstention. The nature of this particular agenda item is to conclude an investigation, and it is given discretion to this body to consider whether we're at the stage in proceedings where we would conclude it. So it would be presumably self-serving to vote to conclude an investigation in which one is personally named, and that was the basis of my original advice. You are also correct, Regent Geddes, in that the ethics law specifically calls out a provision where it does want to encourage and not require public officials to vote so that they do not divest their constituents of their representative voice in government. But the law is very clear that that is only true where there is not a conflict of interest. There are thousands of ethics opinions out there that explain the scope and nature of these types of conflicts of interest, which are very much done on a case-by-case basis. And so for that purpose, and also to, frankly, avoid the possibility of an ethics complaint being filed, it was my recommendation that regents who have been named and subsequently investigated disclose, because I didn't want the perception that voting to conclude the investigation would affect your personal interest. And also, ethics statutes must be read together in unison, and there are multiple other ethics statutes set forth in NRS 281A.400 that talk about personal interests that are not specifically tied to pecuniary interests, where regents must not act in their official capacity to affect their personal interests in that way. And that was the basis of my advice.
Thank you. And with that, we'll go to Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry about the delay. I just would like to say that I was going to have this long speech, but Regent Geddes put it so eloquently that I'm just going to say ditto. I don't believe I violated any of the three issues that are mentioned in the NRS, and therefore I will not abstain from voting.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we go to Regent Moran.
Yes, Madam Chair, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay, I wanted to make sure because I think I had some trouble earlier when we were doing roll call, but I'm glad that that's been worked out. Just a couple things from a logistical standpoint and a legal standpoint. I am a lawyer, as is Yvonne Navarez-Goodson and our trusted deputy attorney general. And I've been practicing for over 20 years at this point in time. I understand that we have a recommendation relative to disclosure and abstention under 281A, both NRS and NAC. Of the potential of conflicts of interests and further a directed abstention. I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. Is it your recommendation, Deputy Yvonne Navarez-Goodson, is it your recommendation that there be disclosures and abstentions under NRS 281A of certain individuals on this particular board? Is that I'm just trying to see if that's correct. Is that a correct statement?
Madam Chair, again, through you to Regent Moran. Yes, the basis of my advice was to recommend disclosure and abstention for those regents both named and investigated in the internal complaint. Again, that is just advice. It is up to the client to determine whether they would like to accept that advice.
No, and thank you. And one other question, Ms. Navarez-Goodson, did you also, in your advice to the board, did you also include a recommendation with regard to the safe harbor provision that is in the code with regards to recommendations given by legal counsel to their public officers' clientele?
Yes, again, through you, Madam Chair Pro Tem, to Regent Moran. Yes, the safe harbor provision set forth in the Nevada Ethics Law, NRS 281A.790, subsection 5, provide that the Ethics Commission would not be able to find a willful violation against a public officer for following the legal advice of the agency counsel. That, again, is for willful violation. It would not protect against a non-willful violation. The distinction between the two would be for a willful violation, there could be monetary sanctions imposed. For a non-willful violation, it could result in any number of things, any number of corrective action, remediation, letters of caution, letters of instruction, and things of that nature.
Thank you, Ms. Navarro-Goodson. I sat as a chair of the Ethics Commission going back several years ago, and I tend to agree with your analysis, your legal analysis, and your recommendations to us as your clientele. And I appreciate that, Ms. Navarro-Goodson. I appreciate that. I appreciate your expertise, and I appreciate you making that recommendation to the board. And it is unfortunate that that some of your clientele are choosing not to follow your advice. Moving on, I'd like to echo the remarks made by my colleague, Vice Chair Amy Carvalho. I am not going to belabor those items because she put those out there correctly, and I am in full support of her thoughts, her justification, her analysis, and her understanding of the issues, both subjective and objective. And so I will stay away from that. Another item that I wanted to discuss is it has to do with the fact that we now are in a position where our time, which is very, very limited, the oxygen in the room, which is very, very limited, is being taken up by things that are not moving the system forward as a whole. And it is very, very unfortunate to me to see where we are today. The chancellor has obviously has a contract in place, and she is top of the food chain. She is the brass for the institution. And it's unfortunate that we are in a position where there is a communication gap between board and chancellor and chancellor cabinet. It's very, very upsetting to me. I will say that I cannot support the motion as is. I feel that the best case scenario and the same legal advice, I mean, I'm not a chemist and I'm, you know, not a psychologist, but I am a lawyer and not just as of yesterday. I would be giving the same legal advice that Ms. Navarro-Goodson would be giving with my specialized knowledge, experience in that particular lane. I'm remiss to say that I would be remiss to say that I'm disappointed in my colleagues. Now, as far as the vote is concerned, I feel that the timeout and the status quo and the preservation of the status quo would be the correct course. And to keep leadership in place that we currently have. We have elections coming up mid-year, but as of right now, with the issues that are surrounding and circulating and being disseminated, it's unfortunate that this has come to what it's come to be. I will say that us Regents will be sorry, Madam Chair, can you hear me? I have the court calling on another line.
Yeah,
I will wrap up.
Okay, thank you.
I feel that one good thing that has come out of this is a rally of support behind our chancellor for the system. In being in the political and legal community for many, many years, I have never seen such support, and to see the business community and also all of our folks from campus, whether it be faculty, student, teacher, Senate, is actually one thing that gleams hope to me moving forward. And I will also say to for everyone who did speak about this item to continue the fight, because regents are only going to be here for as long as their terms exist. They go away. They come, they go, they get their picture up on the wall, and you know, business moves forward. The business community will be here forever, and I'm glad to see that you are all continuing to row in a straight direction, in a simultaneous, consistent direction, and working with each other, and I'm very happy for that. And so I'll end with that and say that I would not be in favor of changing anything, but maintaining and preserving status quo with recommendations made by our legal counsel. Thank you.
I shut myself off. Thank you, Regent Moran, sorry. And with that, we'll go to Regent Boylan.
Thank you. Madam Pro Tem, I have been named in this issue, but I will still be voting. And I feel that I have been not only slandered, but libeled too. So I take this very seriously. I take the council's advice very seriously, but I second what Regent Geddes and Regent Brooks said. So I will be voting on this, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Is there any other comment? Carrie, anybody else? Okay. I have just a few comments myself. I want to move forward too, but to vote to approve today for me is going back to the status quo. And I know Regent Moran mentioned that word, and that wasn't working before for us, and it's not addressing any of the underlying issues that got us here. I'm not comfortable concluding the investigation when there are possible ethic and bylaw violations that aren't being addressed. We're reinstalling leadership before we've crafted a plan to even go forward. This action precludes us from deciding whether any additional investigation is needed, especially when it's been reported that there may be outside investigations into this matter coming forward. Our stakeholders are watching, especially our students, our staff, faculty. These are the people we serve in these positions. Of course, we serve our constituents. And let's not forget, the whole reason that we're here, that we get elected, is to advance higher education in the state of Nevada, to advance research, to advance workforce development. I can't support this motion. I look forward to the day when we have public comment that comes into this room and gives us accolades. This is my sixth year on the board, and we get plenty of, I would say, a lot of times warranted negative comments. We have an opportunity to come together as a board, support the work that we've been set out to do, that we've given the chancellor to do. We had a unanimous vote for her in 20, and I'm very disappointed our colleagues aren't even taking advice of legal counsel. I think we have a systemic structural issue within the board. It doesn't help when there's different legal counsels because the trust has been broken. And I just can't support the motion and go back to the status quo. I've tried my best in this temporary position. It has not been easy. It's taken a lot of personal time away from me, but I'm willing to do the work. I'd like to see this board move forward in a positive direction. And with that, if there's no other comments from any of my colleagues, I will ask Carrie to please do a roll call vote.
Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo?
No.
Regent DuBrava?
Yes.
Regent Geddes?
Aye.
Regent McAdoo?
Yes.
Regent McMichael? Regent McMichael? Thank you. You've voted no. Thank you. Regent Moran? I've been told that Regent Moran has dropped. SDS, can you confirm, please? Regent Moran is not present. Regent Perkins?
Aye.
Regent Tarkanian?
Aye.
Regent Arascata?
Yes.
Regent Boylan?
Aye.
Regent Brooks?
Yes.
Regent Carter?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho?
No.
The motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And let's go on to item number 3. We have new business. Do we have any new business in ELCO? Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking public comment. I'm sorry. I saw Regent Geddes' hand up for new business. Regent Geddes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have two items that I want to bring up. But before that, I do want to say that I do truly appreciate the work that you and Regent Carvalho have done in the interim. And I would hope that the two of you would work with Regents McAdoo and Carter and the Chancellor on seeing how we can address a lot of these issues and get them moving forward. So I do appreciate that. The two items, one is, and I brought it up to Chief of Staff, Search Chair Moran, was to ask for us to hire outside legal counsel until the Chief of Staff legal counsel search is completed. I'm not sure if he had the opportunity to bring that up with you, but if you could work with Regent McAdoo on finding a way we could get, you know, temporary outside legal counsel until that search is complete. That's my first one. The second one is I would like us to address the mask and vaccine mandate issues again. And really what I would like is the task force that Vice Chancellor Cage and General Counsel Reynolds are working on is to design some standards. As we heard in public comment today, there was kind of a, you know, the mask dropped, even though the percentages were very high in several counties. And I know the state has an option for lowering mask mandates based on the percentage of infection rates and hospital beds, et cetera. And I would like us to bring back a policy that addresses if we should be doing the vaccine mandate again and mandatory masking again based on some set of standards primarily directed by the CDC. So that's my request.
Thank you. Regent Geddes, anybody else have new business? I see Regent Carvalho and then Regent Brooks.
Thank you. I would like to add to new business a discussion to create a governance committee to oversee basically these issues that we've been dealing with now. I don't think we have a way of dealing with this. And also I'd like to bring forth a discussion regarding the possible violations of our bylaws by the regents mentioned in the report. Thank you.
Regent Brooks.
Thank you. Like as we all know, because it's been made public, there were strong yet, I would say, offer unsubstantiated allegations levied against me by Melody Rose concerning the 5 p.m. non-meeting meeting that took place on December 30th, 2021. I appreciate that I was provided the authorization to conceal carry in the system office after substantial threat assessments were recognized by the Southern Command Office for Public Safety Services and University Police Services. And as a veteran, I took an oath to protect and defend not only the Constitution, but the public as well, which includes my fellow regents, staff, and the chancellor. In as much as the closed non-meeting meeting was open to a select few.
Excuse me, Regent Brooks. What's your item in new business? Because what you're doing is reading a statement. So what's your new business?
The item is that I'm asking that an agenda item be put forward in support of the Board of Regents waiving privilege regarding the closed meeting that took place on December 30th in order to release the video to the public.
Thank you. Is there any other regents with new business?
Yes, this is Regent McMichael.
Thank you, Regent McMichael. You have the floor.
Yes, I too would like to see under new business a reinstatement of the mask mandate. I wish additional regents would weigh in on this so that we could get this at the next available meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'd also like under new business that we address how, I don't know how to say this, the confidential leaks and how we can go either tighten up our process, or change our process, or find some kind of way to stop this. It's appalling to me that so much of internal personal matters within ENSHE gets leaked. I'm just appalled by it. And with that, I think we go to public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is none, Regent Del Carlo. We have no public comment.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? And I see someone approaching the podium.
Okay, Nicole Thomas, president of the Grad and Professional Student Association at UNLV. I'm here to echo the sentiments of our faculty senate chair, as well as our undergraduate student body president. Students, faculty, and staff are exhausted. We are completely burnt out at the end of our ropes, not being paid nearly enough, and yet here we are at yet another meeting where we feel that some of the regents have maintained lower ethical standards than our own student governments. If my club or organization benefits in any way from an action or a vote, I abstain. I understand that as a clear directive to not participate in anything that I would benefit from in the fear that I may accidentally commit an ethics violation. The fact that you are able to vote in affirmative to install yourselves in leadership positions while there is an active call for an ethics investigation, I feel like I'm absolutely losing my mind, but somehow, somewhere, you don't feel some twinge of concern or embarrassment at these actions. We, as students, are begging you to please get it together and move forward. We're growing increasingly frustrated with the lack of inaction. I appreciate Chair Del Carlo's remarks, as well as Regent Carvalho. I appreciate you taking the time to try to move forward in a positive direction for us, but it's clear that many of your colleagues don't feel the same. Back to the status quo we go, but just know that the students and faculty are here and we're watching. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen Yap, C-A-R-E-N-Y-A-P, and I'm going to talk about my favorite thing on earth, which is CSUN student government. We had a Senate meeting this Monday, and oftentimes student government can feel really clicky and biased at times. I would even argue that I myself am a victim of these biased remarks, unfair to the actual work I do. And I'm honestly really shocked at the amount of bias and clickiness in this body is somehow worse. Another thing happens in CSUN, knowing when to abstain. This Monday, a senator asked about when to abstain. If you have a conflict of interest or this vote may benefit you in any way, our 25 student senators know when to abstain, so I'm just baffled as to why that doesn't translate to the governing body of Nevada's higher education system. I can respect some regents' refusal to abstain, even with the clear biases there, like so clear I can literally predict the vote down to the number. But Regent McAdoo and Carter not doing so, even though they were named, even though this vote clearly benefits them and reinstates them as the head of this body, given there was no discussion given by either Carter or McAdoo regarding an agenda item about them, I think choosing to not abstain to, quote, represent your constituents is an excuse, a true disservice. Vice Chair Pro Tempore Carvalho is the regent for my district, so, queen, I feel set. And it's honestly sad that I feel as though I got lucky with my representative. There are individuals literally choosing to be compliant in a very knowingly broken system. A regent mentioned today that if we had to shut down businesses, schools, companies on all, quote, possible ethic violations, we'd have to shut down everything. And I don't know what else to say than shut them down. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
I think it's important for the record, Lisa Levine, just to acknowledge a couple things that happened today. Of course, you're all very much probably aware by now that there has been a request by several large organizations in this community. All of you whom are elected officials, whether you're conservatives on the board, Regent Brooks, I see you, or you're progressives, you have all of that support in the room opposing the motion that was made today. But furthermore, not only did you violate your own advice received to recuse yourself, Regent Geddes, you also violated attorney-client privilege today, so that's something that I highly recommend. Some of the level-headed regents on the board recommend for new business moving forward to investigate. Thank you.
Seeing no other public comment, I just want to say that I pledge to do everything I can to move this board forward, work with all of my colleagues, and to find a congenial and collegial way to move forward. And with that, I call this meeting adjourned. Thank you.